Welcome into another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff from C70 at the Bat. With me, Tara Wellman from Bird Seeds, as you can go find season three's premiere that was on tonight?
I think season one got started about halfway through the season, so it's really like 2.5.
Okay. So, but this is, that first season was like the pilot season that, it's a short, judging interest, and then last year, boom, and now we're ready for season three. So go check.
That's the plan.
Go check Tara out on YouTube. There's also a link up at the Cards Conclave, for Tara's new Bird Seed. So go check that out. And a lot of what she talked about, we're going to talk about tonight is too, because as we were talking before we got on the show, there's really not much point in talking about the games this week. Although the Cardinals won a lot of them, and that's a good thing. The Cardinals continue to have a very strong spring, but because, in part, that we don't get to watch the games, and in part because they don't matter, off-the-field issues seem to have taken a front seat for this team and for this organization. So we have a number of topics that we were going to try to cover in a brief amount of time. We don't know how brief that time will be because some of these are impassioned topics, let's say. But Tara, let's just start with the 40-man roster. I think that may be the easiest place to start. The Cardinals have pretty much already set their 25-man roster. I guess that's what I really should say. They've set their 25-man roster, which is a little early, being that there was a week left. Tommy Pham went to Memphis. Jose Martinez got the last hitting spot. And we saw Samtuo Lavala sit down to Memphis as well. Miguel Sokolovic is going to make the opening day roster, as well as Matt Bowman. There's really not a lot of surprises here, but it is kind of interesting to see that the Cardinals just took out all the drama and solved this problem a week early.
Yeah, when they sent specifically Tommy Pham, I think that was a guy that a lot of people had their eyes on, and then made this announcement so early, I was not expecting this to be the least controversial topic this week, but here we are. No real surprises. Once a couple injuries happened, particularly as far as the pitching is concerned, that sort of laid itself out. There wasn't a whole lot of competition there, and as far as the guys in the bullpen, there were really just a few names that were competing for those last spots, and even those, it seemed that this worked itself out in those areas. I think the spot for Jose Martinez, because as we talked about last week, it was the one that wasn't supposed to happen necessarily, I think that would have been the last piece of the puzzle that would have been the reason I might have expected them to wait a little bit longer to make this opening day roster announcement, just because you want to give someone who's been at the major league level a couple of times every opportunity to earn that spot. And the unfortunate reality for Tommy Pham is that he didn't, and he's been given a number of chances to claim that spot and to not let go of it, and he's just struggling right now. So, after an off season of work, after playing a lot of league level, you'd like to see that he had carried over some of that experience into this year, but hopefully he can get it going at Memphis. And then if Jose Martinez struggles, like I think a lot of people expect him to at some point, just based on his minor league history and the fact that he doesn't have experience at the big league level, then Pham will be right there ready to take that spot.
It's a part that we have talked about a lot in the spring, and not regarding completely here, but it's partly true. It's also something that we'll get into later on in a different topic. But how much does spring statistics matter? How much should they matter? There are people that are on the Tommy Pham bandwagon, which is a reasonable place to be. I don't want to say that sounds like a bad thing, but that are proving that Tommy Pham, even at his worst, has had it in the major league level has had some more success than Jose Martinez. Just because Jose Martinez is having a good spring, does that mean he should get the call over Tommy Pham? Especially when it seems like, at least what I was reading, Tommy Pham is likely going to be a backup in Memphis. He's not going to get a chance to start much because, you've got Harrison Bader down there, and I'm not sure who the other outfielders are, but in center, at least, you've got Harrison Bader that's going to play all the time. How much should they weigh? You don't want to decide your whole roster before you go into camp. I mean, camp has to mean something, but where, how much should it mean, I guess?
Yeah, I think that's always the question when you come into spring training and when you watch these guys go throughout their routines. And I think that the answer to that question is probably very different, and with good reason. For the guys that you've got penciled in as your starters and the guys that you're weighing as the backups, the fourth outfielder, the extra infielder, the utility guy, what they do in the spring has more weight, I think, than maybe someone who's been there, done that, and is using the spring for a different purpose. Those guys that are the regulars and they've been told that's what their job's going to be, not to get too far into a topic for later, but this will come back up again, so remember this. But those guys come into spring trying to do something different. They're not in spring training to earn a spot on the roster. They're in spring training to work on their mechanics, to make sure that their swing's right, for the pitchers to play around with a different grip on a curveball, or to try to get back to a place where they felt more comfortable with some of those mechanics. All those things are what those guys are doing in spring training, not necessarily to produce great numbers in the spring, but so that they're ready with all of those pieces in place by the time the regular season comes along, because they've been at the big league level. They know the way that a season progresses, and this is their chance to kind of tinker with some of those things in game action and see if they can make themselves better for the regular season. Guys that are coming in without that guarantee, their focus has to be different in the spring. And I think that maybe it's unfair to say that they need to come into spring training more ready to produce great results than the everyday guys do. But that's almost the harsh reality of being a guy that's trying to earn that spot, is that these few weeks that they have matter a little bit more in regards to the results on the field and not just the process. But even then, you know, I think Tommy Pham hasn't been comfortable all spring. And I think that as much as the results have been poor, it's not hard to see that he's not where he needs to be and that that's not a good option for the major league club right now. So it's partly due to the results, to the statistics, but also just the fact that he has been around and the Cardinals can see as an organization, that he's not right now. And maybe Memphis is the place to continue to get some of that work in.
And I think that's something similar to what I saw Derek Gould in a response to somebody else about spring training statistics said, that basically when the stats match up with what the club is seeing, with what their internal evaluations are, what, you know, the scouts are telling them, all that stuff matches what spring training is showing you, then those stats mean a lot more than, well, again, it's something we'll talk about a little bit later, but Stephen Piscotty is having a rough spring, but there's this idea that he has hit balls hard, that he is, you know, he's really working on this thing. You know, whether that's, you know, how much of that, you know, some of this is you just have to be there to see these guys. And apparently Tommy Pham has not been able to, you know, his 209 average this spring is pretty indicative of what his approach has been, I guess, is what it's that way.
Sure.
What I do worry about for Tommy Pham, I don't worry as much about, you know, him being sent to Memphis, because like you said, there's a good chance, you know, that shuttle's going to run a little bit. but if it's the case that he's not going to get time as a starter in Memphis, which there's a reasonable argument. Again, you have to have Harrison Bader out there. You've gotten Aroldis Garcia that's going to play outfield. You know, but if he's not going to get one of those spots, or at least play on a fairly regular basis, even if he's not the starter, it's going to be very difficult for him to gain any of that value back, in which case he's not going to make the major league team, because he's never going to be able to get the rhythm or whatever that he needs to do. Cause I mean, I don't know that he's this kind of guy that needs the on field at bats, but it would seem to me that most players are. is this kind of the end for Tommy Pham at St. Louis? Is it hard? It's hard for me, at least, to see a real future for him.
Yeah, you know, I think Tommy Pham's story for St. Louis has always kind of been what might have been. And well, that's because of injury or because of really unfortunately timed slumps, or the fact that he was always the fourth or fifth guy, but that there was also someone right behind him that could leapfrog him at any moment. You know, it's just kind of a product of the harsh realities of baseball, but it doesn't seem like there's a very clear path for him to continue with the Cardinals in this same role, because it's not going to be long before Harrison Bader's that guy that gets the call up instead of Tommy Pham. I mean, Cardinals might want Bader to get some more seasoning at AAA for now, but you know, second half of this season, if things aren't going well with a fourth outfielder in St. Louis, Bader might be that guy, and that's a reality I'm sure that Tommy Pham doesn't want to face right now. But his options are limited, not just as far as options back and forth to Memphis, mm-hmm. but in his opportunities to make enough of an impact and enough of an impression that he's the guy that gets the call instead of someone else.
You know, I have even argued that Harrison Bader's position in of himself, and again, he's one of the top prospects, but it's in a delicate position because, you know, the Cardinals just signed Derek Fowler. You've got Grichuk and Piscotty who are young and should be there for a while. And then you've got people coming up behind him like Mag Sierra yep. and others. So yep. if Bader's position as, again, a very valuable top prospect is in jeopardy, you know, Tommy Pham doesn't have much of a chance at all. I think his best, Tommy Pham's best chance, and I hate to say it this way, is that Jose Martinez, you know, gets hurt or is very ineffective very early. Yeah. And they get that route. Cause like you said, if it gets down to June, July, when that, you know, fourth outfielder is needed or they decide to make a move, it's very well could be Harrison Bader to come up. If nothing else to showcase for a trade. So, you know, Tommy Pham's got a very, very thin line that he's got to walk right now. And, you know, he really needs to figure out how to hit very, very quickly.
That'd be a good start.
Yeah. So if he could just do that, great. You know, easier.
We've solved everything. Yep, just figure out how to hit.
We're going to solve all the problems tonight, one way or the other, you know.
Yeah.
If people just don't listen to us, it's not our problem. But, you know,
that's
what we're going to do. All right. Moving on to the next problem that we need to solve then, and that would be trying to balance a legendary catcher versus a top prospect and everything that goes along with it. Yadier Molina back from the World Baseball Classic where he led Puerto Rico to a second place finish and then decided to have a beef with Adam Jones, which we don't really necessarily need to get into here. I will say, and before we get too far along, it feels like Yadi, I don't want to say feeling his oats, but he definitely came out as a leader of that team, whether it was the Adam Jones comments or the security that he felt Major League Baseball was not providing to their families. Yadi was not shy, and I don't think we've really seen that side of Yadi that much in St. Louis. I don't feel like he's been that vocal while he's been a Cardinal.
No, and I sort of alluded to that in the Birdseeds episode that I put up this weekend. Really just that something happened in his experience over the last few weeks with the World Baseball Classic that ignited this confidence, this emotion, this just over the top version of himself. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Believe me, it's fantastic to watch on the field. And I think that watching anyone who's as passionate about anything as Yadier Molina is just something that we can all sit back and admire. But I think that it's done a couple of things. First of all, yes, he's much more vocal at this point, and that is going to play into these contract negotiations, I believe. And whether it happens in the next week and they get it done before opening night, or if they completely close the book on that until after the season, the fact that there's this renewed confidence and this re-energized sense that he is one of the very best, that might actually hurt St. Louis in their attempts to get Yadier Molina to sign an extension, especially if they decide to table those talks until after the season, because we've all seen how that has gone for John Mozeliak in the past. He doesn't have the greatest track record there, and if Molina feels like the organization has disrespected him, we've seen in the last week what happens when Yadier Molina feels disrespected. It doesn't go go well for the party that's doing the disrespecting. So I've seen a definite turn in the way that he has talked about wanting to stay in St. Louis versus this, I'm going to get my money because I'm great at what I do. And I don't really know where that came from, except for this experience that we saw from him playing for Puerto Rico in the World Baseball Classic. I could be totally off base. They may have nothing to do with each other, but that's sort of my hot take on this whole Yadier Molina issue.
And I think that's reasonable. Like you said, he got it inspired by playing with some younger people, some people that really looked up to him. And, it could be. I know that Yadi, well, I think we talked about it too, how he has not disavowed Benji's comments about free agency and things of that nature. Whether Benji was talking for him or not is a different story. But again, Yadi's kind of come out and confirmed a lot of what Benji has said here, that, that he's ready to, he can go to free agency, and he's, wants to be a Cardinal, but, if the money's not there, the money's not there. I do think it's interesting, and it feels like, it feels like a rerun of the Albert Pujols situation, as you referred to in the Bird Seeds at times, but it also feels that way because it feels like, and again, we're on the outside, we don't know how this works, but it doesn't feel like there's a willingness from the front office to actually engage here. It feels like they're just kind of sitting back, and there's not, even if they're wanting to do that, they're not communicating it very well with Yadier Molina's camp as they didn't with Albert. And I feel like these players coming maybe from a different, background, different culture or whatever, although I don't think that matters. I think anybody could feel this way. Are feeling a little bit, snubbed, rejected, by not getting an offer. Or not having some serious discussions. And that's the kind of thing that blows up on you later. As some people have pointed out, it does make sense for the Cardinals to wait till the end of the year and see what kind of Yadi or Molina they have. Because right now, Yadi is at the top of whatever he can. He has all the leverage he wants. He hit 320 or whatever in the second half. He hit, looks like he hit 7 home runs in that time period. He's obviously was playing well. He's got the World Baseball Classic now for him. He has no downside to negotiating right now. The Cardinals have a lot of it. Because if Yadi comes out, and we forget, last May he hit 212. Last June he hit 235. He had one home run before the All-Star break. That could easily be the Yadi or Molina we see this year. There's no guarantees that we're going to see, peak Yadi. And if the Cardinals go out and pay right now for that, they could be regretting that move later on. Now, again, I think they should. I think they can. And I can understand why Yadi would be offended, but, it feels like there's this culture clash of, wanting to be prudent versus, wanting what the player wants, but not, and as we will see in our next discussion as well, communication is always an issue with this club.
There's a common theme in all of these topics tonight, and it seems to be a lack of communication. But, you're right. It seems like the Cardinals front office is kind of sitting back saying, oh, we'll talk if they want to talk. And Yadi's representation is saying, oh, we're here if they want to talk to us. But no one's really willing to make that first move. Or to even, again, there may be conversations happening that we're not privy to. But, to even just say, okay, let's see where we are and how far apart we really are. But I will say this. I think that the success of Molina in the second half of last season and what we've just witnessed in the World Baseball Classic, and again, this renewed ability. I mean, coming back in his first game today and hitting a home run in his first game back from the Classic. I mean, the guy's on some kind of roll right now, let's be honest. I think that may be complicating things from the Cardinals front office perspective, because did any of us expect Yadi to be playing like this at this point in his career? I mean, giving him an extension or coming up with a number that made sense to the Cardinals was probably very different a year and a half ago when it looked like Yadi was on the downslope of his career rather than finding the fountain of youth in Puerto Rico or something. I don't know. But it seems like this is a different Yadier Molina that they're negotiating about than they had expected when they started propping up Carson Kelly as the heir apparent. Mm-hmm. And they may not quite know what they want to do with that right now because there's so much of an unknown as far as how Molina is going to perform long term, not just in the next few weeks, not even just this season, but if they give him a 4-year contract, are they going to regret it in year two when they've really passed the opportunity to give Carson Kelly a real shot and now they're looking for someone else to be the heir apparent 4 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, they've been digging for somebody to come along behind Yachty for a long time. And granted, part of it is that catching is hard. It's difficult to find. But to have a right. chance to get a guy like this, like Carson Kelly, who, again, is not going to be Yachty or Molina. He's not going to be a Hall of Fame catcher, most likely. But, again, like you said, if you don't activate him soon, I mean, he needs the year this year for seasoning for sure. But there comes a point, as we saw with, I think, some other prospects at times, like Brian Anderson, maybe Tyler Green, if they don't get a chance to develop on the major league level, they never actually come out. You know, if they cook too long in Memphis, then they come out burned. And I think that that's what you run the risk of with Carson Kelly. Now, again, nobody's suggesting that Carson Kelly is ready right now, although right. he's not as far off as maybe others. And let's be honest here. We're talking about Yadier Molina being a free agent at the end of the year. And that's very possible. But it's a mutual option for 2018, which means that both sides have to pick it up. Now, very rarely does this happen because, you know, usually if one side wants to pick it up, the other side doesn't. But if the Cardinals pick that up at the end of the year and Yadi doesn't, and it's, again, a $15 million deal, it kind of puts a little bit of a question mark on how much he really wants to be in St. Louis, too. I mean, you know, you could pick that option up and spend another year negotiating. You know, again, that loses a little bit of negotiating position and all that kind of stuff. But if you really want to be in Cardinal, then you take that option, I think. I don't know. Again, that's a ways off, and there's some strategery in there as well. But it just it's getting, you know, this time last year we said Yadi really is going to be a Cardinal for the rest of his career. And I don't know that we would have said that about Pujols because of the contract situation. But 10 years and all that. It feels like now a lot more questioning about the fact that Yadier Molina might be wearing another uniform at some point in time, which seems very, very strange.
It does. And I'll just be clear. I think that Yadier Molina as a Cardinal for the duration of his career would be a phenomenal thing for the city of St. Louis. I think that it would, I don't know that you can do a whole lot more to cement your legacy in one city than Yadier Molina has, but that would be one way to do it. We all know what the reaction was when Albert did leave, and the fact that the legacy he'd built up until that point pretty much vanished overnight in the minds of most fans. And Molina is at a point where he can do the same thing that Pujols had the opportunity to do and didn't. So there's a lot entangled in this mess as far as the business side of baseball, the idea that there seems to be this unspoken tension between Molina and the front office, which is a bizarre thing because that hasn't really been an issue before. Mm-hmm. And then the side of baseball that's a little bit more the romance of the game, the idea that this is a guy who grew up in the organization and could spend the entirety of his career wearing the birds on the bat. I mean, there are so many pieces that sort of create this puzzle that it's not something that's going to be decided overnight, only it almost has to be as far as the Cardinals are concerned.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's one of those things that if the Cardinals tore up that option for next year and gave Yadi a 3-year, $60 million contract. Now, $20 million for catcher sounds crazy. I mean, although, as you pointed out in Birdseed, that would put him like third in the catching ranks behind Buster yeah. Posey and I'm not sure who the other one was.
And Brian McCann.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that's an old contract that doesn't look good now, yeah. So I guess if you want to look at it that way. But, you know, again, the Cardinals are on the, you know, besides the fact that Major League Baseball is printing money now, I mean, they get, just from the advanced media slice of pie, they can pay for Yachty's contract. But they've got a $1 billion contract coming up with Fox Sports that has yet to kick in. $60 million is a drop in the bucket for them. So they can do that if they want to. Yeah. And I think if they come out and say, we can do this, but would hamstring what we want to do as a team. I don't think anybody's going to believe that like they did with Albert. Right. Albert made sense, because that was a long contract and a lot of money. But now, I mean, they have saved so much money over with young players for so long. It almost comes to a point where they've got to do something. I think there's going to be a little bit more backlash if Yachty goes, than there was if Pujols went, when Pujols went. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how John Mozeliak is ranked as a GM in the future history, if you let both Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina, and of course Matt Holliday, although in a little bit different situation, leave without having their chance to finish as a Cardinal.
Yep. I completely agree. It's a big moment in his GM career, and you got to be careful not to mess that one up, because it could have multiple layers of repercussions if you do.
Speaking of people that may not be a Cardinal much longer, let's go on. It's time. We've beat around the bush long enough. It's time to talk about Colton Wong. And I told Tara before we started the show, I would probably just say the words Colton Wong, and she would fill up the next 30 minutes. I feel like we should probably let you have first crack at it. So let's set the scene a little bit. Colton has the idea now is that Colton is going to be a platoon second baseman. That seems to be what Matheny wants to do, and there's some comments from Mozeliak that indicate that. Colton did not apparently get told that very well. In fact, it seems like the media may have told him this, and had some comments that indicated he was not happy with that he would be fine with them trading him. He kind of walked those back a little bit later on, but all in all, if anybody thought the Colton Wong situation was kind of behind us after last year and his comments with Rob Raines, I think we can guarantee that is not the case. Tara, I'm just going to give you the floor and let you go with this however you want. Let's just talk about Colton Wong.
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, I feel like I always have to preface anything I say about Colton Wong by saying, yes, I am a big Colton Wong fan. I had the opportunity to cover him in his very beginning stages of his professional career. I have interviewed Colton, and one thing that I take away from that maybe isn't as evident to people who haven't had that one-on-one interaction with Colton, is that he is extraordinarily transparent and very genuine and really so conversational in interviews that I think he forgets that he's in an interview and not a conversation. And that's great on some levels, because I think we beg these athletes to be transparent and to give non-cliche answers and to tell us what they're really thinking. And then we often throw it back in their faces when they do and say, I can't believe you would say that. It's so immature of you. But I think with Colton, he's just that genuine of a person. You ask him a question, he's going to give you an answer. And it's not a secret that he's a pretty emotional guy. He rides those emotional ups and downs throughout a season, whether it's on the field or off the field, and that is going to come out in an interview with someone who is just that naturally open into talking about whatever you throw at him. He's not the most polished media professional in that he's not particularly crafty at dodging questions that he doesn't want to answer, but I don't think he always realizes that what he says in the answer is going to be written about and talked about and brought back to his attention, especially if it's somehow based in an emotional reaction to something. So the comments that he made were probably better left unsaid, at least unsaid in that way. I think it showed a great level of maturity and professionalism when he went out of his way to clarify what he said after he maybe had some time to think about it, or someone texted him and said, hey, did you really say these things in an interview? But I thought it was great that he came out and said those things. All of that said, I can't really blame him. I mean, I went back and was talking to someone about it this afternoon, and if you look at the course of Colton's career in St. Louis, 2013, he was the hot new prospect that came up at the end of the season, and then Mo put him on the playoff roster, shocking to all of us, really showcasing how much this organization believed he could make an impact. And then he became the guy that got picked to end a game in the World Series. That stays with a player, especially a young guy who came up with so much promise and then took a pounding for that over the entire offseason. Then 2014 was the year that Mark Ellis was sort of the ghost hovering over Colton's debut season at second base and really taking a lot of that playing time as well when Colton wasn't hot out of the gate. 2015 was the only year of his career that he did not spend time at the minor league level, and I don't know if people remember this, but the first half of that season was actually really great. There was a run up into the All-Star game where it looked like he might actually be an All-Star that year. There was an injury, there were some bad stretches in the second half, and there were some things that made that season not look as great as the first half did. And then 2016 happened, and we all saw what that was all about. The Cardinals gave him the big contract. He felt like he had established his place. And then piece by piece, every ounce of confidence he'd regained since being picked off to end game four of the World Series in 2013 was almost systematically stripped away from him, really concluding with that trip back to Memphis, where they basically said, "We're done with you. Figure it out somewhere else." All of that to then come to this offseason and be told, yeah, I know last season was rough, but you're our starting second baseman. You're going to be the guy. And then to find out from the media that that's not only not the case, but that it's not the case before spring training even ends. I mean, I cannot tell you that I would not have reacted in exactly the same way if I was asked that question either.
Yeah, it is... There's an argument, and I think there's validity to it, that says, you know, especially like we get to the spring training stats, you know, if Colton wants to start, he's got to hit better than 190. But I think there's also this idea, as we talked about, as you talked about a while ago, Colton didn't come into this. I know he said this. I know that he said at winter warm-up the right things about he was coming in to prove that he could be the second baseman and all that. But like you said, the Cardinals had told him, you're our second baseman. And as you said, coming into spring training, when you know you have a job, you're allowed to feel like you can work on things. And that's what Colton has done to some degree, as he's tried to work on some things. And then those spring training stats then get thrown at him and said, well, we're going to platoon you. Now, when they said that he's going to platoon, I don't know that anybody, well, I guess probably did, I would not have been surprised to see him sitting against lefties anyway, even with this full commitment to him. I think that he should have played some against left-handers, but knowing how people protect lefty versus lefty, like it's, you know, this religious part of baseball to some degree. I mean, we have seen Matt Adams. I mean, Matt Adams has done well at times against left-handers, obviously not the best thing, but he has made some, had some key moments against some left-handers. I think Colton Wong can do the same thing. But I would not have been surprised. Like, opening night is John Lester on the mound, left-hander. He was unlikely to start opening night, no matter what. I just don't think. Unless they really wanted to show a commitment to him, and obviously that's not quite the case. It does feel like it's just very difficult for Colton to find his footing. He has said in some articles that he needs regular repetition to keep his, you know, to get his swing going right. In fact, he did the minor league, what they call the minor league car wash not too long ago, where he spent a day going through and jumping into all these different minor league games on the back fields so that he could get at bats. He got 10, 11, 12 at bats in one day, just jumping around trying to get his swing going. But this is a team that played Pete Cosmatos 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know why we're as worried about his offense when it's fairly clear that he is the best second base, defensive second baseman that's on this team. And in theory, this team has enough offense to carry him, at least for a while. Alan and I were talking on Meet Me at Mutual, and we both kind of came up with the idea, kind of to the conclusion. You know, if you let him, we would have left him out there for a month to 6 weeks and basically said, you're playing every day and let's see where you are after the end of 6 weeks. And that's, again, it feels like that's, after 6 weeks, if Colton's still hitting 190, then yeah, okay, we reevaluate that. But to reevaluate this off-season commitment to a player as you said, even before the season starts, is, again, it feels like there's this communication gap. And it also makes it feel, I mean, honestly, it makes it feel that Colton Wong is not long for this team. I don't know what, you know, again, he's not exactly upped his value anywhere. But if he got off to a hot start, it would be hard to believe that John Mozeliak wouldn't move him, because it just doesn't feel like, for whatever reason, that he and Matheny or he and the organization seem to be on the same page, and they're never getting there.
The disconnect as far as the conversation about Colton Wong is just mind-boggling to me, because it's almost in consecutive breaths that John Mozeliak, who has been in Colton's corner from day one, will say, we realize that we've made a commitment to defense this year, and Colton Wong is the guy that's going to get us there as far as the second base job is concerned. And there's leeway in what he does offensively, because we need that, the strength and the athleticism of his defense at second base to carry this team forward. But then as soon as you sort of feel settled with that idea, then he comes back with, well, but there's got to be some, you know, equity as far as how he matches up offensively and whether or not he carries his at-bats into the field. And we start hearing all of these almost rehearsed lines that are excuses for not playing Colton Wong. And it's interesting to me how this has sort of developed between Mike Matheny and John Mozeliak, who's obviously the voice of the scenario in this case. But we've seen in the past, if there's been a disagreement between the use or over the use of a player between Matheny and John Mozeliak, Mo's got the power to just send that guy away. He's done it before, and he has not done that with Colton Wong, and it's continued to be the same story season after season, that it seems like Mo wants Colton to be the guy, but Matheny is not convinced that that's a good idea, so he just plays a different hand, despite the public conversation that John Mozeliak lays out there. And as far as Colton is concerned, he's not going to be the 300 plus hitter who hits 20 home runs a year. That's never been the player he profiled to be. And yet, when he had some success, when he started hitting home runs on a fairly regular occurrence, all of a sudden he got the confidence boost that it seemed like he needed, but then he started to try to be that guy. And then in 2016, the guys who hit home runs were the guys that got to play. So if you're trying to find a way to gain back your playing time and to earn the confidence and the trust of your manager, you're going to try to be whatever he wants you to be to get back on the field. The problem is that's not who Colton Wong is. Everyone wants to sort of look at the numbers that have been a struggle for Colton without contextualizing them, and every season that has been such a struggle, there's been other circumstances, whether it was a veteran who was threatening to take playing time if he wasn't as consistent as they wanted him to be, or if it was the fact that he wasn't the kind of offensive player they needed him to be. The best season of his career was the one season where they pretty much just left him alone. It shouldn't be, I mean, I don't think that's a complete coincidence. Similar to Randall Grichuk, when they finally just put him in center field and let him play, all of a sudden the numbers that everyone was so worried about started creeping back up to a level where everyone could kind of take a breath and realize he might just figure this out after all. So this whole back and forth dialogue between John Mozeliak and Mike Matheny and what they say versus what they do, I can't figure out what they're trying to do, because it really seems like if they actually do want Colton Wong to succeed in St. Louis, they've got to stop this back and forth and just pick something and then let Colton figure it out from there.
And that's, and again, I agree with that. I will say there's probably an argument to be made that no player gets every obstacle blown out of their way. Let's put it that way.
Oh, sure.
That they have to overcome these things. And Colton has not done that.
Yeah.
And some of that is a mental aspect. For as much as we got on to Jaime Garcia for that, I think you might have an argument I don't want to say that maybe again more emotional than mental, but still, I really think Colton Wong is a very talented player, and I really think that Colton Wong needs to be out there on a regular basis. I just think that it's easy to blame Matheny, and I think that there's a lot of blame to go around there. I think that it feels like, if nothing else, that the communication between him and Colton is not working at all. And there are people like that. I mean, there are people that you get into that you've gotten so negative with that you're not going to hear a thing that they say, or you have no urge to talk to them or whatever. But, you know, it's still your boss. There should be something there. If nothing else, he should be telling you, hey, Colton, this is what we're going to do. You don't have to like it, but this is what you want to do.
Yeah.
Instead of letting, you know, Derek Gould or whoever it was kind of spring that on him, which it sounds like that's what happened, and maybe it wasn't, but it sure sounds like it. I don't know. Again, I think there, you know, we talked a lot about, and there's been a lot of talk about the clubhouse from last year not gelling and having its issues, and there's the changes that need to be made, and Dexter Fowler are going to be a huge part of that, and it probably will. But obviously there are some parts of that dysfunction, if you will, that are still there. And again, I don't know that it gets solved, without, I just feel like Colton and Tommy Pham to some degree are guys that are going to wind up getting shipped out of town for minimal return. And, you know, in Colton's case, very well may blossom somewhere else, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, I do want to just sort of reiterate that believe me, I'm not just turning a blind eye to the fact that Colton has not lived up to expectations. That is not really in question. I think the fact of the matter is Colton came in with a ton of potential and a lot of expectation on his shoulders, and he has not lived up to it. In fact, my high opinion of what Colton could be is really the basis of my fandom of the guy, and not necessarily what he has done consistently, because he hasn't done it consistently. But I think that the reality of where he is now is that whether it's the pressure of the expectations or the confusion with the communication or lack thereof from the organization, or the number of things he's tried to do to make himself the player that the Cardinals want him to be, or if at this point he's just so confused and so he's got so many things going on, it's almost like he just needs a hard reset. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that can happen in St. Louis. I don't know if it can happen in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm thinking too, that it's gotten so far into him that, you know, just in that, without changing, and even maybe not even changing managers, which is not going to happen. But even if that was the case, I don't know if that's enough to get Wong to click or not. And it may just take a completely different, organization, a different, you know, change of scenery may just be what he needs. And again, I'm not advocating that. I'm advocating putting him out there all the time. But right. That just may just be, have to be what it is. We have gone about 45 minutes. We have not even touched on Matt Adams playing left field or Stephen Piscotty's spring average. But I think that we've hit the major topics of the week. Now, again, next week at this time, well, this is recording this. We started recording this about 9:30, so it would have been about the time the game was over, maybe. But the Cardinals will have played their first game of the 2017 season. They will have played it with Carlos Martinez on the mound. And again, what we also didn't talk about, the fact that it seems like everybody wants to get hurt this last week. But again, don't have time. And so Tara and I will be recording next Monday night and not next Sunday night. As we normally do, to give us a chance to watch the game, and then on off day to digest that and see where we're at. And hopefully we're not talking about, you know, maybe we're talking about Yadier Molina's three-year deal that he signed, you know, right before walking out on the field or something like that. That would be nice. Maybe that's part of the pregame ceremonies that are going to be on Fox Sports Midwest. I don't know. But we will be with you again tomorrow night. Or next week, not tomorrow night. No, we're not doing this again. I don't think Tara wants to go over Colton anymore.
I don't think anyone else wants to hear me say any more about Colton Wong.
We will be with you next week. Enjoy the last week of the spring training. For Tara Wellman, I'm Daniel Shopton. Good night.